Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What is up, Nets world? We're back here on the Believe in Nets podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. As always, big thanks to everyone for listening. Make sure to subscribe to Believe in Nets on all streaming platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. Smash the like button, leave a five-star review if you can. I'm your host, Eric Slater, Brooklyn Nets beat reporter for clutchpoints.com. Recording this at about noon on Thursday, and things aren't going great in Nets world. The arrow is pointing down. The Nets are down to 26-43 on the season. They've lost six of their last seven games, and they are all but eliminated from the play-in conversation. And with that, just recorded a good interview with Brian Lewis of the New York Post. We discussed the dire situation the Nets find themselves in. We discussed how that could potentially impact their future plans. We discussed Sean Marks' future, Joe Tsai, the current roster, what it could look like with them trying to improve it versus going into a rebuild and what's going into that decision. And before that, just adding some context to the situation that the Nets find themselves in. We're now coming up on 3 months of the Nets being one of the worst basketball teams in the league. Over the last 3 months, I think they have the sixth worst record in the NBA. And frankly, they look even worse now over these last 2 weeks than they did, you know, early on in some of those struggles. And it's getting to a point where you don't have confidence that they can beat any team in the league. Over their last, I said they're 1-7 over their last eight games. During that stretch, they've lost to the Memphis Grizzlies, led by Luke Kennard, who had nine players available. They lost to the Detroit Pistons, the Charlotte Hornets, and the San Antonio Spurs. Those are four of the five worst teams in the NBA. And then that's frankly, you know, maybe outside of that San Antonio game, looked outclassed in those games and did not look anywhere near the better team on the floor. So a pretty dire situation, a situation that understandably has the fan base angry and wanting answers about where this team is going to go and how they're going to, you know, take accountability for this and respond moving forward. And I broke down all of it with Brian, some really great insight that I hope you guys enjoy after the theme music. We're joined now by Brian Lewis of the New York Post, friend of the pod. And Brian, I think Nets fans don't have any time for pleasantries right now or anything along those lines. So let's just get right into it. The Nets are free falling. The season is just about lost. Since December 14th, the second half of the season, 13-33 during that span, sixth worst record in the league. For reference, it's the same record as the Portland Trailblazers in one game ahead of the San Antonio Spurs, 26 in offense, 17 in defense. And then Kevin Ollie comes in, and the Nets had those pair of Hawks wins who were directly ahead of them in the standings. Thought maybe they could show a little fight and have somewhat of a shot at the last spot in the Eastern Conference play-in tournament. And since then, they're 3-6 with losses to the nine-man Memphis Grizzlies led by Luke Kennard, the Detroit Pistons, Charlotte Hornets, San Antonio Spurs. Just your reactions to the second half of the season and then more recently their inability to get going during this recent stretch under Kevin Ollie.
Well, all right. There's a lot to unpack there. In my mind, they are talent poor. I would be disingenuous to say that they aren't. I think they are probably underachieving. I think they are not as bad as their current play would imply. When they go out on the court, there are precious few teams that I have any confidence that they'll beat. I do not think they are or should be the least talented roster in the NBA, or the second least talented roster, or the third least talented roster. And by that, I'm very specific. I'm just talking about this year. I'm not talking about what Wemby will be 5 years from now, right? I'm talking about what the Spurs are today, which is a terrible team.
That was pretty clear down the stretch of that Spurs game. I mean, the Spurs did a lot to try to give that game to the Nets, particularly not bringing Wemby back until I think like 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter. I was like, what is he doing on the bench? Nets still find a way to lose, but go on.
Yeah. So I think their situation where they are talent poor, you know, bottom third somewhere, but their lack of cohesion and lack of incentive, maybe, is showing through and making them look even worse than their already poor roster is.
And, you know, when you look at the second half of the season, and particularly this last month or month and a half, you know, you're not going to put it on one player, but the Nets' top player prior to that and last season after the trades was obviously Mikal Bridges. And Bridges has struggled mightily, you know, down the stretch here. Over the last 16 games, he's at 15.8 points per game. He's shooting 38% from the field. And frankly, this last 10 games has faded into the background considerably. I think he's attempting the third most shots on the team and just does not look like a player who's been comfortable carrying the load, you know, as this top option. And frankly, he hasn't been the top option in this recent stretch. But, you know, that obviously has led to a conversation of Bridges obviously played in his 500th straight game last game, the Iron Man streak, led the league in minutes over the last two seasons. I think he's second this year, played in FIBA. So it's led to a conversation of, is he fatigued? Is he injured? Is he just uncomfortable in this number one role, you know, as this season has progressed? What do you make of Mikal's, you know, pretty glaring struggles during this stretch? And what do you attribute those to? And just what have you seen from him?
One, I think it's all of the above. People, for whatever reason, don't want to consider the fatigue element in this. They say, oh, these guys are in their 20s. They're only playing every other day. What's the big deal? 500 straight games is a lot of games. And it's not just the 500 straight games, right? You're not bringing him off the bench for the last minute of 500 straight games. This is a guy who was leading the league in games and minutes and miles, right? I mean, that's a heavy workload. And then you consider the fact that he played, 13 games in FIBA, and I think was second on the team in those minutes. Yep. He clearly does not get a break. He can say all the right things that he doesn't need a break. He can say, well, I'm going to be here for my team whenever, blah, 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 et cetera. There comes a point where sometimes you have to protect players from themselves. Now, I'm not saying if this guy, who is arguably your best player, really wants to keep this streak alive, that you just go out of your way to irritate him and sit him. I'm not saying that. But 37 minutes doesn't always seem necessary. Mm-hmm. You know, some of that needs to be scaled back. Secondly, no, he is not a 28-point-a-game scorer or 27 and change or whatever he averaged over those last 20-something games last year. That is not what he is. And now that he is on the scouting report, And not only frequently guarding the best perimeter player, but being asked to be a 20-some-odd point scorer while he's fatigued. And frankly, you know, I don't know what kind of headspace he's in right now. I don't like to make those projections because I'm not in his head and I'm not a shrink. But he is clearly a guy who is accustomed to winning and who wears every single loss on his sleeve. And this is a lot of losses.
Yeah, and this has become such a frequent talking point amongst the Nets fan base, and rightfully so, because this is supposed to be the top player. This is the guy that you're, reportedly turning down four first-round picks from certain teams, you know, the majority of your draft capital from the Houston trade, which is the ticket to being able to rebuild in a proper way. So you expect production from this guy. Just my stance on it briefly, what I've said is that, like you said, it's a combination of both of those things. And, you know, people look at the minutes and it's like Bridges led the league in minutes the last two seasons. He's played the most minutes in the NBA over the last five seasons. But to me, it's that and it's him being miscast in this number one role. And those things are building upon each other because people like to think that like all minutes are created equal. They're not. You know, when you look at the minutes that he's playing with this Nets team compared to what he was doing with in Phoenix, you know, especially earlier on in his Phoenix tenure, he's moving a lot more offensively. He's being asked to do a lot more on the ball as an on-ball creator, especially in the first half of the season. And you couple all of that exertion with what he was trying to do on the defensive end. And it's just the fatigue factor of it building up along with the added, you know, responsibilities that he hasn't been accustomed to throughout his career. Those things are building on each other. And that's not just physically, as you said, that's mentally also, because as those losses continue to pile up, you know, that responsibility, being asked to do things that you're not necessarily comfortable with, along with your body just not probably being in the best condition, it's not a recipe for success. And, you know, that may fall on management, obviously, you know, just as much, if not more, than it does on Mikhail. So that is, you know, it's gotten to a point where he just does not look like he's the player that he's been. And he looks like a guy like the rest of the Nets team that, frankly, is limping into the offseason. And that leads us, you know, kind of into some big picture talk about where this team is. And just talking about that, you and I have discussed on, I think, post-trade deadline, we did our pod, the plan has been or indicated to be to wait for 2025, the offseason, when they'll be set up with all that cap space when Ben Simmons' contract expires and a stockpile of draft picks. And, you know, in the meantime, these two seasons, be that scrappy team of high-level role players, maybe improve around the margins in the mold of that 18-19 squad. That's failed miserably this year. And I think it's safe to say that this team has performed well under the expectations that management had. So do you think that the second half of this season and how miserably it has gone has been bad enough to change their long-term outlook on that plan?
I wish I knew. And I don't.
In your opinion, then?
If I had to guess, I would say no, but I don't feel strongly about that. Right? I know what the opinion was in the summer. I know what it was in camp. I know what it was earlier in the year. I know what it was, frankly, around the deadline. I don't know what it is now. And as we point out, they've looked horrid.
Yeah.
And there they've
looked like one of the worst teams in the league. There's right. No other way to put it. Like right. They've
looked like one of the worst teams in the NBA. And you are in an entertainment business. And there is a loud subsegment of their fan base that is letting them hear about A, how bad they look, and B, that they don't agree with what they feel or what they are seeing is the plan. I don't know to a certainty whether it's enough to change their opinion. What I would say is there's a lot there. There's a lot of evidence there to change your opinion.
And all right, so if they are to, you know, if they are to not pivot to a rebuild and they are to keep continue going down this path, it brings into question a lot of interesting things into question, because they're mostly going to be looking at the same roster next season, barring a big time move this summer. You know, running through the numbers quickly, They've got $122 million on their books next season, committed to 10 players. The cap's projected for $141 million, luxury tax, $172 million, which they're going to avoid the luxury tax to reset the repeater tax. Yeah. And that's before signing Nick Claxton. So they're $19 million before the cap, before signing Claxton. You know, if they re-sign him, as I think most expect him to do, we'll talk about that. They'll be around $30 million below the luxury tax with four roster spots left to fill. Now, they still have a $20 million trade exception from the Joe Harris deal that could be used to bring in a decent-sized contract if they wanted to while still staying under the luxury tax. But barring a trade for a star, a big name, whoever becomes available, will ownership, you know, stand for another year of this kind of mediocrity, you know, or could there be, I don't want to call it a panic move, but as I just said, but it would ultimately be kind of a panic move. Could there be a trade for a big name to avoid another year of this? Do you see that as kind of the direction this could be headed based on, like you said, the fan base and how miserable this season has been?
Yeah. And remember, they also have the trade exception for Spencer.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is sizable.
It's a big one. I mean, there could certainly be a move. I don't know whether the move would pivot them away from what their plan is, but certain things come up and become available that may accelerate your plans. You know, I don't see a panic move that's sizable for an older player, because it just doesn't make any sense. Could there be a move for a guy in his prime who you didn't think was going to be available, who becomes available? Absolutely. That 100% could happen. And we see in the NBA guys become disgruntled at the drop of a hat and want to move.
So then, you know, looking at this team, if they're going into this rebuild or they're going into, you know, continuing to try to stay competitive, those are the two paths that they can go. Right. It brings into a question of, you know, how much of that is an ownership decision, how much of that is a management decision. We've heard Sean Marks say after the Jock Vaughn firing that him and Josiah have been in lockstep. They're in, you know, agreement, which he's not going to say anything else, but those are his words. Right. It brings into the conversation of, you know, if a rebuild is identified as the right plan, which I think most of the Nets fan base seems to think is the case. Do you think that Sean Marks, who's in his eighth season as GM, would he be allowed to enter another rebuild? Like, does he have that kind of luxury from ownership, you know, or would that mean a fresh set of eyes coming in? And would that mean that, you know, they need to just go into another direction? Because it's interesting because Sean Marks shown that he can do the rebuild. He did it once, but there's not many GMs that would survive everything that's happened, particularly over these last 4 years, go into their ninth season as GM and then, you know, perceivably be going into a ninth, 10th, 11th leading a rebuild after all that's happened. It would be kind of unprecedented. So how do you view that?
My supposition is that if Josiah, the owner, says, all right, let's rebuild, let's do this, Sean will say, okay, I've done it before. I know how to do it. Let's do it again. I think it would have a bigger impact on who's coaching. All right. You would have a completely different set of options for coaching than you would if you were trying to be competitive in 2025 and win in 2025. That's what I would say.
So you don't view Marks, you know, what do you view as his level of job security right now after this season? We got 13 games left. We're heading into the offseason. They're going to finish as a bottom seven team. Do you buy that him and Josiah are in lockstep as he's indicated, or do you think that his job, his seat may be getting a lot hotter than some people would let on?
It's a good question. I think up until this point, I have always thought his job, his seat was not hot at all. There have been years when people have been clamoring for his job, and I've said, this is fake news. This is not real. He's not getting fired. You guys can stamp your feet about it all you want. He's not getting fired. While I do believe that he and Joe by and large, are in lockstep and by and large see things much the same way. And they have a very open dialogue of communication. Much more open than, say, you know, Billy King and Mikhail Prokhorov, right? What I would say is this. This is the first time when I could easily make a case for saying you might need to go in another direction. How many coaches is this man going to hire? What I would also say is, and going back to my earlier point, what direction you choose to go in or Josiah chooses to go in, I'm not sure that that 100% determines Sean Marks' fate, but I would say it determines who Sean Marks hires. There are some coaches out there that probably would have no interest in, you know, coming to coach in a rebuild that's going to take 3 or 4 years.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll be inviting everyone over. From barbecues to girls' night, the kids can even host their friends.
Whoa, it smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy, the way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match 2 of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
And then, you know, talking about just not trying to relitigate too much of what's happened, but there's been a multitude of factors playing into where the Nets are now, how Sean Marks is perceived, that necessarily in any other era or period of time would not have been at play. You know, you have obviously the, you know, COVID-19 mandate that was pretty much the trickle down that set off a huge chain of events that led to a lot of these things, something that was out of Sean Marks's control. And you would also say that, you know, the Nets were, following that Boston series in the 2021 playoffs, were the by and large title favorite. And then they have two, you know, poorly timed injuries to Kyrie Irving and James Harden. They still take the Bucks to 7, but they lose. And then everything falls apart after that because of the COVID tenure. Now, those two were two major events that were out of Sean's control that I think a lot of people who, you know, think he's a good GM or in favor would point to. A lot of people would also point to, you know, in the other direction after that, him not being on the page, the same page as James Harden, pretty much getting played, getting to the point where he was caught off guard 3 days before the deadline and made a move in taking back Ben Simmons' contract that has been, there's no other way you can describe it, but disastrous for this team and how they're trying to build. You look at why they're probably going to be a mediocre team, if not a terrible team again next year, it's because Ben Simmons is making $40 million. You can't really build a team when that's right. The case. So that would be the move, and everything that's transpired since then, that obviously would be the detractors, you know, point. How do you view Marks' tenure, and how do you view his effectiveness as a GM, weighing those two separate things, you know, and how they kind of come together?
I would agree with what you said. I think he has made a ton of moves that are, in a vacuum, good moves. He has made a few moves that are the most important moves that he's had to make that have been poor moves. He's made exponentially more good decisions than bad decisions. Unfortunately for him and for the Nets, some of those bad decisions are more weighty, right? Being blindsided by James Harden, that's bad. That's not all him. I mean, they have an entire front office.
Yeah.
You know, they have people that in essence are supposed to be spies and know what's going on and whatnot. And it's not just him, but that's bad. The return has been bad or beyond bad. So I would say, you know, the most successful coaching hire in my mind has been Kenny.
By far.
You know, who you pick as your coach is important, right? So I think by and large, many of the moves he's made have been good. But some of the biggest ones that he's had to make haven't exactly come up smelling like roses.
And, you know, the signs have yet to indicate, as we touched on earlier, that they are willing to enter a rebuild, to blow this up, to go in that direction, to bottom out for a couple of years, potentially, to set up the future. All the indications have and continue to be that they're going to try to stay competitive, use all the draft capital that they have, the cap space that they're projected to have in 2025, to build up a competitive roster. And obviously the aim has been to put a star next to Mikal Bridges that would allow him to slide back into his accustomed role, be more comfortable, and then build the roster out from there. Now, I think a lot of Nets fans, understandably, are looking at this and saying, we're the 6th, 7th, 8th worst team in the league. Everything looks miserable here right now. Why is a star coming here? You know, in what world is a star leaving a situation that might be better to join this? Now, you know, not asking you for specific names, but it almost seems as if, could there be something that, you know, the Nets know that the fan base, you know, doesn't know, or that the reporters even, that we don't know? Do you buy the idea that they might have some intel and that there might be a plan in place that, you know, other people are just aren't privy to? Because outside of that, it's kind of indefensible. It's kind of almost insane, it would seem like, to be banking on stars to join a team that looks like one of the worst teams in the league. So, you know, is that something that, you know, passes the sniff test for you, or do you view any validity to that?
Okay. A lot to unpack there. One, I want to be clear, when I say, or when I've said in the past, use those draft assets. I don't mean use them as in making all of those picks. Mm-hmm. I mean, trading those picks to
be. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
Secondly, I have no doubt that their front office, and, you know, just about every front office, knows a lot that we don't know. Knows a lot that the fans don't know, and then knows a lot that we don't know. The longer I do this, I'm always fascinated at finding out something, sometimes after the fact, you know, after a trade has been made or after a player has been signed or what have you. And you find out, you're talking to people and you find out the little nuances of how it happened. You say, oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. So I have no doubt that they feel they know things that we don't know. That doesn't mean that I necessarily think that they have, you know, they have tampered and they have a deal cut out with somebody and this and that. Nor do I think that, you know, you're talking about necessarily adding somebody huge in free agency. Like I'm saying, it could very well be a trade, more likely than free agency. What I would say is this. Yes, I do think they feel that despite the fact that they had three superstars all demand trades in a whatever 12-month span or whatever it was, that they can still recruit players. That I will tell you that they believe. Now, I have no idea whether that is whether they're in denial or not. I don't know. But that 100% is their belief.
Okay.
That despite these three guys all asking out in short order, they still believe that guys will want to come play in New York.
Okay. So I'm going to play the role of the fan right now. And from that perspective, like you said, I'm a Nets fan. I look at my team. We just had three of the biggest names and biggest stars in the NBA ask out, demand out, the biggest of which asked for the GM and the head coach to be fired at the same time. They all got sent out. You know, the GM stays. After that, the team, which they probably expected or definitely expected to be competitive, we stunk. We're one of the worst teams in the league. We're a bottom six team in the league for the last 2-3 months. Mm-hmm. Why? Where does that belief stem from? Why do you guys believe that a star is going to come here? You know, and that's, you know, what all the fans, I think, would be saying right now, and completely understandably so. I think the last point you touched on probably seems like one of the biggest legs they have to stand on is just that they're in the New York market and guys want to come and live in New York, have those business opportunities, you know, have that lifestyle. Do you think that's it? Or just what do you think the belief is stemming from?
I think that's a large part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, if they were the Boise Nets, no offense to anybody, you know, but they probably would not have the same level of belief. And yes, they are constantly talking to agents all the time. There's not a day goes by where somebody, and it may not be Sean, you know, but somebody in the front of talking to agents. And, you know, you get an idea. You understand? And players talk to players. So you get an idea when somebody has no interest in coming to play for. Like, they knew the last time Kevin Durant was a free agent that they weren't, you know. I mean, ownership was kind of surprised, I think. You know, when he was on Long Island and wouldn't give them an interview. But I think other people in the building knew we don't have a shot here. Right? Mm-hmm. We know this already. We will try and he will reject us because we have to try. But we know we don't have a shot. And I'm saying between talking with agents and players, I think they have a feeling that they can still attract players. Now, when I say players, I want to be clear. I'm not saying that I expect, you know, tonight Giannis to be sitting there saying, I demand to be traded to the Nets over the summer. I'm not saying a player of that caliber, but they do feel like they are not, say, radioactive, mm-hmm. right? Where players are going to look at that and say, well, you had all three of them and all three ass out. Your culture must be trash. I'm not going there. That's what I'm saying. They do not feel they are in that boat.
And the interesting part about that is that it indicates a monumental disconnect between where the front office is at and where the fan base is at. And there's always going to be some level of disconnect because, like you said, like they know so much that the fans don't know. But this is one of the bigger gaps you're going to see, I feel like, in terms of how the fans are viewing the team and how the front office is viewing the team. And while we're talking about the fans, you know, this podcast is for the fans. What was your first year on the Nets beat? How long have you been here for?
2015.
Okay, so when you see where the Nets fan base is at, the state of the team, the atmosphere at the games, the discourse surrounding the teams, how do you view this in comparison to, you know, the rest, you know, since you've come to the team? Is this one of the more, you know, down years in terms of mood that you can remember, or is it the most down?
Overwhelmingly the most. I've had years where I watched and the fans were okay. If you go on the assumption, which I don't, but if you go on the assumption that ambivalence is the worst thing, Then no, this isn't the worst, because I did see years where they just didn't care. Nobody cared. Nobody. The attendant showed that. The vibe in the building showed that. The amount of coverage. I mean, you still had a lot of people covered, but they just weren't writing a ton. But in terms of the vitriol or the negativity, oh, this is the worst by a margin. You know, you've got ostensibly fans of the same team that are creating, for whatever reason, a false narrative and a civil war between two players. Two players, by the way, that I have never seen get in a fight or have beef with each other. Or
I almost tweeted that when somebody, I forgot who it was on Twitter, you know, it was one of the
hundreds, a lot of them,
that replies that stuff. But somebody was talking about Mikhail and Cam Thomas, who you're obviously referring to, and was talking about, you know, them, like, the Nets favoring Mikhail, and, you know, it's like Cam Thomas's detriment, and he should be, you know, outraged about how this has gone, and like them having a potential feud or rivalry. And I'm like, I've seen Mikhail and Cam interact in the locker room. Their lockers are right next to each other. They are very close by everything that I've heard and everything that I've seen. So it's just been funny to see that kind of play out within the Nets fan base, because those are two guys that like each other a lot. And, you know, they've created this, you know, like you said, there's this narrative in their head. But go on, finish.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's that. There are things that I don't even want to get into. There are things that, you know, I don't want to be that guy, so I'll discuss that with you off the pod. But there are things that I've been told about just how angry and negative some of the fan base has gotten, and some of the things that have been sent that are concerning. And I will leave it at that.
A couple more things I wanted to touch on before rounding this out. Obviously, Joe Tsai, you know, and his, you know, the direction that he's going to want to go is one of the main factors. If he cuts the checks, it's how this is going to play out. So, you know, it's entered a curious conversation of, is he willing to enter a rebuild to be one of the, you know, the worst teams in the league? How much does that hurt his bottom line? Is he more content to maybe just, you know, swing for a star that might only make the team a mid to bottom, you know, tier playoff team, and just, you know, put butts in the seats and keep making money, keep that valuation potentially rising it? You know, is he in it for the long haul? Just, you know, what would you say to that? To, you know, I know you can't go into his head and say what he's thinking, but is there a willingness to bottom out? And do you see Joe Tsai as a guy who's in this for the long haul? Or is he a guy that you think in the meantime would more so, you know, want to keep interest level around the team as high as he can, even if that might not be the best route to winning a championship?
Okay. There's a couple questions in there. One, as far as bottoming out, I don't think he has an interest, an appetite for that. I don't think it helps that the Knicks are across town killing it. Right. Now, as far as a TV, that's not a Joe Tsai problem. That's a yes problem. Right. But when you look and you look at the Nets ratings and you look at the Knicks ratings, and this is with the Nets, bad as they are, trying to be competitive. If they try to lose, the Knicks will get easily three times their TV ratings. Easily. That's a bad look. Now, as far as his mind, I can't get in his mind, right? I can't get in another man's head. But if you're asking me to guess from what I know and surmise, I will say in the past, I've been told that he views this as a generational thing. I want to be clear. He's not like he's actually a really humble guy, and he's not like somebody. He's not comparing himself to like, you know, the Maras or Steinbrenner or anything like that. But he's saying this is something that he would want to pass to his kids. Now, someone can always change their mind. You buy something, you can always change your mind and sell it later. But that was his viewpoint. So assuming that hasn't changed, I would say then he is in it for the long haul.
Okay. Yeah. And, you know, you touched on the TV ratings and things along those lines and the optics surrounding the team. And it's something to consider if you're a fan moving forward of how much of this decision, are these decisions being made in a basketball sense or are these decisions being made more so in a business sense? Now, obviously, those two things are always factored into the conversation, yeah, no matter what, especially in a market like New York. But how much is one a priority versus the other would be the question I ask. And the reason I ask you how long, you know, is this a guy who's in for the long haul? That would be very prevalent to how much, you know, what is being factored more there. And, you know, one more thing I wanted to touch on, obviously we got the news and you've had some reporting and insight in it about the Koch family buying a minority, I think it was 15%, you know, in stake in BSC Global, the Nets parent company. I think that I saw you say that there would be no path to a majority stake. And I tweeted before we did this episode, you know, have any questions, reply here. Brian and I will try to touch on them. And a few people tweeted, you know, could the Koch family, you know, is Marks potentially going to be selling a stake? You know, how does that work out? So just give your insight into that, you know, them buying in and, you know, what that does that say anything about Cy potentially selling down the line? Do they have a path? It seems like you said no, but just what do you know about that?
Yeah, I mean, the Koch family had initially been talking about 10%. And then I got word they raised that to they were looking at 15%. As far as I'm told, there is still no avenue for them to take over control. But that does not mean that the younger Koch won't someday, when you look up 20 years from now, be a majority owner of an NBA team, right? That seems to be the path. A lot of people do get their feet wet as a minority owner, and then whether they take over that team 10 years later or 15 years later or 20 years later or sell there and then buy another one. So I do believe that's probably part of the mission. I mean, I think that's the end game, is to be an owner of an NBA team. But as far as I know, there is no pathway for them as part of this deal to take over a majority stake or a controlling stake of the Brooklyn Nets.
Okay, understood. One more thing that I wanted to touch on that we should have touched on earlier, but you know, one of the biggest storylines entering this offseason is Nick Claxton's unrestricted free agency. The Nets obviously opted. There were reports that, you know, there were going to be some teams that were interested at the deadline. Would the Nets entertain that or not? They, you know, opt to hold on to him. And now he's looking like he's in line for, at minimum, probably a $20 million annually deal, you know, somewhere in the, if I had to project, in the 4 years, 80 range, potentially, definitely more. Yeah. How do you view the Nets' is appetite for re-signing him? And does the decision to hold on to him past the deadline signal a team that is going to put on a full court press to bring him back?
Yeah, I mean, unless you were planning to tear it down, I don't think you could trade him at the deadline. Now, if you were planning to rip it down to the studs, then yeah, he's a valuable piece. I would have traded him. But the fact that they didn't should imply to me that they don't intend to go into a rebuilding phase. They've known for a year that this was coming. I mean, they've been acutely aware that his free agency was coming and roughly what kind of market he was going to have. And they've been saying, well, how are we going to come up with this? We got to make sure we have this money set aside. He has in the past said he wants to be here. That is not a question I have asked him over the last couple of days. I don't know. Again, minds can change. But if he still wants to be here and they want him here, it's not going to be cheap. Mm-hmm. I would agree at least 20 million, maybe more.
Yep. And then they're going to have three players under contract on this team, and Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, and Nick Claxton making in the $20 to $25 million range. And with this new CBA and some of the spending constrictions down the line, that could, make it, or not could, it will make it very difficult to bring in not just that first star, but if they're potentially looking to build this roster out and bring in multiple marquee names and make Mikal Bridges that number three, which it seems like that's what he is, and that would give them the best path to contention. I see them re-signing Nick Claxton this summer, in my opinion, and it seems like that doesn't necessarily mean that they're committed to him, in the long term, but, it's kind of asset retention like they did with CJ, not losing him for nothing. You could always trade him down the line and, kind of trying to keep the value in that sense. But it's going to be a hefty financial commitment. They just made one to Cam Johnson that he's battled injuries this season, but is not, it's not looking great right now. But, that's where the Nets are at. Brian, really appreciate you coming on, taking the time to break down all this stuff, all this insight that I know Nets fans have been asking for and are going to find very valuable. You've been doing great work, as you always do, through the not the easiest time to, put together storylines and coverage surrounding this team. So really appreciate you as always, man.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, man.
That does it for this episode of Believe in Nets on the Believe Podcast Network, your one-stop shop for everything happening across the sports and entertainment world. Hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Brian. Always has great insight. Really enjoyed chopping it up and breaking down what's happened with the team. If you guys don't already, make sure to subscribe to Believe in Nets on all streaming platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. Smash that like button. Leave a 5-star review if you can. That really goes a long way. I'm your host, Eric Slater, Brooklyn Nets beat reporter for ClutchPoints.com. You can find all of my articles on ClutchPoints.com, as well as constant news, updates, analysis on my Twitter, @EricSlater_. I'm trying to do some good video content on there, so follow if you can. The Nets are limping to the finish line. We got 13 games left in the regular season. It hasn't looked pretty, but with that, we get into the offseason. We have some interesting talk about the direction of this team, and there'll be plenty of more coverage along the way. Talk to you guys soon.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's toilet bowl cleaner disinfects both the toilet brush and bowl for 2-in-1 disinfection, killing 99.9% of viruses and bacteria. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
When something happens to your car, you might say, but what you really need to say is something that can actually help.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And just like that, State Farm is there to help you file your claim right on the State Farm mobile app. So, just remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.